Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Hey, Lulu here. Whether we are romping through science, music, politics, technology, or feelings, we seek to leave you seeing the world anew. Radiolab adventures right on the edge of what we think we know, wherever you get podcasts.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. My next guest has gone from second in command of Saddam Hussein's Air Force to spokesman for the prime minister in the new Iraqi government. And in a new book, General Georges Saada claims Saddam Hussein did have chemical and biological weapons before the war and stashed tons of them in Syria. The book is called Saddam's Secrets, How an Iraqi General Defied and Survived Saddam Hussein. It's published by Integrity Books. And General Saada, welcome to WNYC. Hello.
Hi, good morning. Thank you.
Let's talk first about your headline claim in the book that Saddam hid tons of weapons of mass destruction in Syria, sent them there by airplane in the spring of 2002. Did you see any of this with your own eyes?
At the beginning I would say, well, it's not a claim, but it's a fact. And second, no, I haven't seen my eyes putting in the aircraft, but the senior pilots who were flying the aircraft, they told me, and they are the people who were responsible for the civilian aircraft.
Your section on this in the book is titled An Eyewitness Report. So you're saying these people are the eyewitnesses. Do you name them in the book?
No, I didn't name anyone in the book.
And what does that do to the credibility of the claim?
Well, the credibility of the claim is this is a true story. Of course, I have seen the weapon of mass destruction, but I haven't seen them putting them in the aircraft because these were secret missions.
I'm just saying, I'm asking you, why wouldn't you name the people who you say were the eyewitnesses? Now that Saddam is gone, that probably would not be a threat to them.
Do you think it's not a threat? Are you sure that you are? Are you going to defend them if I will tell them their names? Are you going to protect their families? Are you sure that you can protect their families in Iraq?
So I'm just asking you to describe your concern. What do you think would happen if you named them?
Their families will be killed. They will be killed. And nobody will help them.
By members of the insurgency who are loyal to Saddam Hussein?
And the Al-Qaeda and the Al-Zarqawi and all the others.
Now, you say you've discussed this with people at the Pentagon, but until now, the way those weapons were transported remains a military secret, you write. So why would Donald Rumsfeld hide evidence to refute the biggest embarrassment in the whole Bush administration, no finding of WMDs?
Well, this is the politics. I'm sure now the American government are doing something, and they know about the weapons. I'm sure they are trying to prove it by a better way. I think it's their business when they are going to tell everybody.
What do you think it would take to prove it?
Well, I cannot tell. You know, this is according to your intelligence.
According to U.S. intelligence, there are
secret
ways that they have to try to establish this. How many airplanes do you say were involved?
Well, the airplanes were two, but they were done about 56 sorties. But it's not only airplanes. Even there were a ground a convoy with big trucks of 18 wheels and other types of the trucks. They were taken to Syria by land.
So how much bulk does this all these tons of materials take up?
Well, you see, I cannot tell exactly how many tons, but I am sure it will be hundreds of tons.
And how big an area would all those tons take up? How big an area? How hideable would they be, let's say, to U.S. spy satellites?
Well, you just imagine when an aircraft can take about 50 tons, and then the trucks can take about another 30, 40 tons each. So it will definitely take a big area. But certainly they will be hidden in a place underground or, you know, some sort of this.
Why would Syria do this for Saddam Hussein?
Well, because the last years, there were a very good relationship between Saddam and Syria. And I think some sort of deal have happened between the two.
Like what?
Well, a deal, for example, that Iraq will send some oil or some sulfur or things like this, commercial, and you keep it for us. Saddam was thinking that it will be again like 1991. It will finish and he will be in power, and maybe he was going to take them again and start his redevelopment of the weapon of mass destruction in Iraq.
You write that Saddam's chemical and mechanical engineers continued building and developing these systems even after the American invasion began. But how does that square with the claim that Saddam decided to hide everything in the spring of 2002, a year earlier?
You see, actually, the weapons were, there was a special organization who hid the weapon, and they were hiding the weapon all the time up to year 2002. But in year 2002, Saddam took the advantage of collapse of a dam in Syria, and there were a lot of floods. So here he announced that he's going to do humanitarian aid to Syria, and it was not true. He didn't send humanitarian things, blankets, food to Syria, but he shifted and moved the weapon of mass destruction to Syria.
But my question is, you write that he moved the weapons of mass destruction to Syria in the spring of 2002, but also in the book you write that Saddam's chemical and mechanical engineers continued building and developing these systems even after the American invasion began.
Right.
If the point was to hide the weapons from the Americans, why would they have also continued to develop them?
Well, they were developing up to the liberation. They were continuing doing everything, and at the same time they were hiding and transferring.
I'm sorry. At the same time, they were what?
They were hiding them. Of course, when he is developing, that doesn't mean he will show it to everybody. Developing, but in a secret way. And at the summertime, it was not spring, but at summer, because the dam collapsed after June. After that, he started shifting the weapon of mass destruction to Syria.
But again, if what you write is that Saddam's chemical and mechanical engineers continued building and developing these systems even after the American invasion began, that's a direct...
Not after. In the book, there is nothing mentioned after invasion. It's all before.
Right. Okay, so maybe it's written wrong, but I'm going to read from your book now. It says, by August 2002, Saddam was convinced the Americans were coming. But even then, the chemical and mechanical engineers continued building and developing all these systems on into 2003 and after the American invasion began, unquote. So is that a misprint?
I think it is. If you are saying this, it is up to the time that Americans have invaded Iraq. Of course, he cannot, in logic, he cannot continue rebuilding when there is war and when there is invasion.
But if it was right up to the time of the invasion, then why didn't the David Kaye or the Charles Dulfer commissions, the investigating commissions appointed by President Bush, find any of those weapons?
I think that there was a very good organization to hide the weapon and at the same time to mislead the United Nations committees.
But if your account is true, then there would have to be weapons that are still hidden in Iraq somewhere that the U.S. weapons commissions did not find after the invasion.
And I still to this moment think that there are some bunkers in the south of Iraq near Nasiriyah. They are still, I don't think the Americans have gone there and checked them, because these bumpers, they have been flooded by water deliberately by Saddam from the Euphrates River. So it will be much better to go and check that also.
So I'm sure that with the 2006 congressional elections coming, there's nothing that President Bush would like better than to find those weapons. Why haven't knowing you and that knowing your book was coming and your cooperation with the Pentagon, why haven't they gone there already?
I don't know. You can ask them. But I am sure that someday they will do something.
My guest on WNYC is Georges Saada, currently spokesman for the Iraqi prime minister. He was, his book says, number two in the Saddam Hussein Air Force, and his book is called Saddam's Secrets. Just one more thing about this, and then I'm going to move on to the current situation in Iraq. Just last week, Republican Congressman Peter Hoekstra, chairman of the House Intelligence Committee and another strong supporter of the war, said, quote, "We have not been able to verify the claims made in Mr. Saada's book. We followed up pretty extensively. There were some interesting things, but we can't verify the aircraft transfer."
Well, you know, it is not verifying. It doesn't mean that it's not happened. I mean, they are trying, and I am sure the story is true. Someday they will verify, and someday they will see what is happening.
And again, this is a strong supporter of the war, and he said, haven't been able to verify. We followed up pretty extensively.
Well, you know, even he have done it extensively. I think not verifying it doesn't mean not have happened.
Okay.
Someday they will verify. And if you will ask Pete Hoekstra now, he will also tell you that he was misrepresented in the Sun about this issue.
Oh, really? That quote did come from the New York Sun. You're right, which is also a paper that supports the war and generally generally thinks that there may well be weapons of mass destruction still that were hidden, but had that quote of Peter Hoekstra. All right, let's talk about Iraq today. Your book flap says you serve as spokesman for the newly elected prime minister of Iraq. Is that Ibrahim al-Jafri?
No, it was Ayad Alawi.
Oh.
I was the spokesman for Ayad Alawi, and now I am the senior advisor to the National Security Council.
To the Iraqi National Security Council?
Yes.
What do you think the situation in Iraq is today? Is it headed toward civil war between Sunnis and Shiites?
Well, I still think that there will be no civil war, but the Al-Qaeda people are not happy because the Arab Sunni Iraqis have participated in the political process, and they had 43 seats in the parliament, and they are going to form the government. So they didn't like that, and they created a problem. They went to the Samarra Shrine, very holy to the Shia, and they destroyed it, only to make the war again between the Sunni Iraqis and the Shia Iraqis for them in order to get the benefit of making the curse in the country, because they are very afraid that the Sunnis are participating in the government, that their situation is going to be very weak.
You consider the war the liberation of Iraq, but at this point, do you think U.S. troops are doing any more good?
Yes, the U.S. troops are doing wonderful, and they have done a great job, a great change in the country, and the fruit of that is the free elections, and you just see how many women have been elected in the parliament. U.S. troops are still important there, but I am sure 2 months, U.S. troops can withdraw, because our army now is about 12 divisions. Half of them are well-trained, and the other will finish the training at the end of this year. So then Americans can make a plan to withdraw gradually.
You think they can withdraw in a few months? Is that what you said?
Yes, I am sure within a few months they can withdraw, because half of the Iraqi army is well-trained, and the other half will be finished his training the end of this year.
Let me play you a clip from today's morning edition. This is Iraqi doctor Salam Ismail. He responded to the bombing of the Golden Dome Mosque in Samarra that has spurred this new talk of civil war, and he questions the usefulness of U.S. troops.
The strange thing is, after the Samarra bombing, people noticed that there is no significant presence of the occupational forces inside Baghdad itself. There's no Humvees. So people now thinking, so what's the benefit of their presence here if they are not doing their job in keeping peace and order inside the country and protected from going to that edge?
How would you answer Dr. Ismail's question, General?
I totally disagree with him. The U.S. forces are very much important to be present there. Until all the Iraqi army will be well-trained, and as I told you, few months they can withdraw, but after that they can withdraw more.
And what will it mean when the army is well trained? The front page of the New York Times today, and everyone else is reporting it too, has a story: 50 Iraq workers abducted at site owned by Sunnis. Kidnappers wore police uniforms, but their identity is unclear. It says in the abduction, the gunmen stormed a private Sunni Arab-owned security company during the afternoon in a busy middle-class area of eastern Baghdad and carted away the employees in white pickup trucks, the kind used by Shiite-led Interior Ministry police commandos, according to three neighbors who witnessed the raid. Now, it could have been some other group posing as Interior Ministry commandos, but there are reports of the government forces themselves being infiltrated by militias and death squads.
Well, let me tell you, now this is very much mixed, because anyone can wear uniform and can say that I am government. So there are people who are getting advantage of all this, which is happening in the country, and I can call it sometimes, some places there is some sort of chaos, and the terrorists, and especially those who came from abroad, they are well trained and they are well paid, and they are doing sometimes very good operations to mix and make this chaos in the country. But this cannot continue forever.
You don't think that there's a major problem with death squads aligned with the police or the military?
Well, I can tell you the police is not 100% well-trained. There is some corruption, of course, here and there, because, as you know, the forces have been built very rapidly, very quickly. It's not a force of 30 years, 40 years experience. It is all new. Therefore, there are some drawbacks and some bad points in the organization. I confess that, but that doesn't mean that the whole organization is not good.
Back for a minute to the question of Saddam and the weapons of mass destruction. If he had chemical weapons, why didn't he use them on invading U.S. troops?
You see, having chemical weapons doesn't mean that he can fight America. So he thought that it will be much better to hide it, and then the war will finish as it finished in 1991, and then he will get use again of it, because these weapons were not all completed. Some were have done, some were raw materials, some were, you know, completed. So it was not a good amount that he can use it against the United States.
We have 30 seconds left. You write as if you were skeptical of Saddam Hussein, even as you served him as number two in his Air Force. Was there a moment when you went from supporter in your heart to enemy in your heart of Saddam? 20 seconds.
I have never been a supporter for Saddam Hussein. I was forcibly retired in 86 because I didn't join the Ba'ath Party, but he brought me back when he invaded Kuwait.
Okay. George Sada, S-A-D-A. His new book is called Saddam's Secret. The publisher is Integrity Books. Thank you very much for joining us. We appreciate it.
Thank you very much.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC.